Hello, my fellow Losties. It is April 19th, 2014. Tonight we will be discussing episodes 4 and 5 of season 4 on Lost for Lost. Episode 4 is Eggtown, the infamous Eggtown. And episode 5, which is The Constant, which is by many people is felt to be one of the best episodes of the entire series. I am your host, AJ. Jamie will not be with us tonight. Karen is running late. She will be with us as soon as she can. So I'm just going to get right into things here. I'm going to start with Eggtown, obviously, as that's episode 4. I'm going to start by focusing on the flash forward, because anybody that's listened to us before has heard us compare really bad television to Eggtown. Fringe, there was an episode we called The Eggtown of Fringe. I must say, however, this is probably the third or fourth time I've seen Eggtown, and during this entire rewatch, I'm really trying to watch it with fresh eyes. It's been a while since I've watched any Lost. And honestly, the episode itself overall is not a bad episode. It is the flash forward that really brings this episode down. If you take away the flash forward, the island stuff is really, really good. I really enjoy the island stuff. So I think, for me at least, I might have to remove my negative comment on something as being an Eggtown and refer to it as a Stranger in a Strange Land instead, because I now feel that Stranger in a Strange Land is really the worst of the two. Eggtown should not be judged just on the flash forward. So with that said, first and foremost, I'm going to focus on the main problems. First and foremost problem is Jack comes into court to testify. Her attorney leans into her and says, I had to do it. Now, first of all, the attorney he works for Kate. Any attorney, anybody that's ever had an attorney, the attorney works for you. You tell the attorney what to do. They don't go and do what they think is best for you. They can advise you and tell you what they'd like to do. You make the decision. So she doesn't want Jack to testify. Jack should have never been in that courtroom. Okay? She could have stood up right then and there and be like, I want to fire my attorney. He's not listening to me. Now, granted, she does something kind of like that. Jack's testifying, and she stands up. She's like, I want him to stop. This is my trial. And, you know, he's already on the stand. You can't, anybody that knows anything about law in any way, shape, or form, you can't do that. Kate should have been held in contempt at the very least, and the judge should have threatened to keep her in custody during the trial, that she didn't have to be in the courtroom if she couldn't shut the heck up and sit her ass down. Something that bothers me, I can't understand how it took so long to go to trial. I mean, at the end of the episode, we see Aaron, and he's no longer a baby. So I got to say, it's been at least, I think, you figure they were on the island 108 days, so that's 3.5 months, roughly. So Aaron was 3 months, and now he's like one. So it was, what, 7 months for them to get her to trial? I don't understand that. I mean, there's a suspension of disbelief in a science fiction show, and bend belief and have time travel and smoke monsters and seeing dead people. There are certain things that you cannot suspend your belief about, and that is the way the judicial system works. And now I agree. I can totally say that TV judicial is very different, but at least they're in the ballpark, whereas Eggtown just totally made up their own rules and totally made up their own stuff, you know. Kate's mother, you know. First of all, she should never have been allowed to see Kate. Should never have been allowed to see her mother. Her attorney says, I you know, made a few calls and, you know, I got you guys some time. That never in a million years should have happened. The district attorney could have been the worst district attorney in the history of district attorneys and still never would have let their key witness speak to the defendant moments before testifying. Okay? That would never, ever, 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 ever happen in any scenario. It's just absolutely unbelievable that they allowed that. Just for argument's sake now, though, they allow it, okay? And her mother changes her mind. So what? She's got all these other charges against her. And not just killing her father. She's, you know, she also assaulted a federal officer. She shot a man. She was instrumental in another, you know, she was at fault for Tom dying. You know, she was instrumental in him, you know, in him dying in the car accident. I mean, there are so many other charges against her that's just one. They could have gotten her on all the other stuff. And here this district attorney, you know, after the mother decides not to testify, she decides that this, okay, we'll cut a deal. And that was a weak deal at that. And then Kate's attorney said, oh, we can do better. And I'm with Kate. That's all you want to do to me? I'll take it. 10 years probation, can't leave the state of L.A. or the state of California? No problem. Hell, I'd agree to that for something I didn't do, let alone something she did do. I mean, it's just beyond the scope of extending your belief system. There was just the entire thing. I mean, I just, for a show that was so amazing and so well written in so many aspects, how they dropped the ball on this very simple procedure. I mean, then they want to keep Kate out of jail, but there's got to be a better way. There's got to be something, and I'll be honest, I can't think of any specific way it could have worked out. But there should have been something, some other way, some kind of deal for, you know, her mother doesn't testify, and then then they continue the trial, and she gets found guilty on the other end. She does something. I don't know. There had to have been a more believable way to get to it than what they did. Perfect example is, I mean, they want her, the DA asks for her to be remanded before court. Well, like her attorney says, she's been free all this time, and now you're asking? I totally agree that Kate is the definition of flight risk. Why not incarcerate her as soon as she got off the plane? I don't understand their thinking behind this. So, that's, 9 minutes, and I complained all 9 minutes. But yeah, it's just, it's really, 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 really bad. You look at the overall of the show, and that, it's just, it's very troublesome that they had this much trouble with coming up with a plausible story. Just awful. Awful, awful, awful. Oh, very sorry. I forgot to open the chat. Let me do that. Okay. Chat. If there's anybody out there that's been wanting to jump in the chat room, I forgot. All right, there we go. So here I am. I'm all by myself, as I am on the call here. And I apologize to anybody that, you know, doesn't like listening to my voice only consecutively, but I'm the only one here for now, so deal with it. So anyway, the rest of the episode, good stuff, lots of good stuff, lots of information. Episode starts with Locke cooking eggs. I'm guessing that's, you know, Egg Town, got the name from, because there's really no eggs in the flash forward. So John's making eggs for Ben, and he goes downstairs to see Ben, and he brings him a book. And this is, you know, simply a shout out to the fans of the show at this point. Gives John Ben the book, and Ben's like, "Oh, look, a book from my own bookshelf. I've read it." And John's like, "Well, why don't you read it again? You might definitely a shout out to the fans because we are notorious for rewatching lost episode after lost episode after lost episode." So they have their little tete-a-tete, and Locke again makes the stupid mistake of getting mad at Ben and going in and slamming the food because Ben won't do what he wants. And Ben, you know, Ben again has a little smirk on his face because Ben is getting to Locke, you know, and Locke's got to stop wearing his heart on his sleeve because he just gives Ben everything he wants. Ben doesn't have to give in to Locke because Ben knows he's better than Locke. Locke is never going to defeat Ben. You know, because Locke wants to know who the man on the freighter is. And, you know, Ben, of course, is still refusing to tell him. The other side of this, you see some cute moments and some foreshadowing. Kate is with Claire, and they're doing laundry, and it's very cute because, you know, I mean, it's been so long since they've had anything of civilization, you know, and Sawyer shows up, and he's like, "Well, hello, ladies," you know, and, you know, very guy next door suave type of thing, and Claire goes to get him some coffee, and it's all very cutesy and everything. But before that, Aaron starts crying, and Claire says to Kate, "Oh, can you grab him for me?" And Kate's all like, "I don't do babies," you know. And Claire's like, "You know, that's whatever. I'm fine, and I'll get him." You know, right there, that's a little foreshadowing, I feel, because in the episode we see that Kate has Aaron, which, of course, begs the question, what happened to Claire? It's pretty safe to assume that Claire is not one of the Oceanic Six. So there's that. So Kate and Sawyer do a little flirty flirt thing and find out Sawyer is shacking up with Hurley, who he calls Montezuma in the episode because you can hear him snoring. Calls him Montezuma. He calls Miles Bruce Lee from the freighter. And that's the whole premise of this, basically, is Kate wants to get to Miles. She very straightforwardly goes to Locke and says, "Listen, I need to talk to Miles. Where are you keeping him?" Tells her, this is not a democracy anymore. And Kate says, "Well, if it's not a democracy, then it's a dictatorship." And Locke comes back as well, "If it was a dictatorship, I would have shot you already." So, Locke is being very pig-headed because he's not getting what he wants from Ben. He's just treating everybody else like crap. So Kate devises a plan. She goes to Sawyer. They have sexy time. And she convinces Sawyer to help her with the plan so she could see Miles. And they trick Locke so that Kate can go bring Miles to Ben so that Miles can talk to Ben because my God, I'm so terrible at this. Totally forgot the best part of the episode. Before that happens, she tricks Hurley into telling her where Miles is at the boathouse, and Hurley right away realizes he just got duped, and he tells her one of my favorite lines on Lost, "You just totally Scooby-Dooed me." Great moment. Totally Scooby-Dooed me. Which is great for me. I loved it so much that I actually made it part of one of my signatures on one of the forums I was on. I think I did it on Lost TV, actually. I put together a little of Kate and Hurley talking, and I had the Dharma machine in the middle of the picture and, you know, made the little quote, "Totally Scooby-Dooed me." But anyway, back to the show. So then she convinces Sawyer to help her. they go to the boathouse where they think Kate is going to be with Ben, and what she did was the other way around. She takes Miles to see Ben, and Miles tells Ben, I don't care about the guy I'm working for. You give me $3.2 million, and I'll work for you. Ben says exactly what I was thinking the first time I watched it. Why 3.2? Why not 3.5? Why am I making it a cool 4 million, you know? What is so important about 3.2 million? So there's that. And then they're trying to hurry and everything, and Ben's like, well, I'm locked up here. I'm sitting tied to a chair. I really don't have access to that. And Miles is like, yeah, whatever, dude. We know that you're capable of things. So I forget how many days he gave him. Gave him a week, maybe. First he tells him 2 days, then he says, like, a week. And Kate's like, all right, we got to go. And as they're trying to leave, Locke shows up, and Sawyer plays it off like, oh, I can't believe she did this, you know. So they put Miles back in, and then Locke banishes Kate. He tells her that she's not welcome there, and she has to leave. So she goes to Sawyer and tells him, Sawyer's like, I'll take care of that. You know, you banished you. He's like, what the hell? And then we see Locke go to Miles, and since Miles won't tell him what's going on, he puts a grenade in his mouth and pulls the pin. Tells him, enjoy your breakfast. Let me know when you're ready to talk. Needless to say, Locke is becoming very, 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 very unhinged. I think the whole Locke problem is Locke stems from his insecurities, and he's trying to show, I'm a strong leader, and he's really not, because Locke is all over the place as usual. He thinks he knows what's going on and finds out he doesn't and does something stupid, doesn't help situations. He definitely makes them worse. Then he goes to Ben and wants to know from Ben what Miles told him, why he wanted to see him. And Ben, you know, of course, doesn't say anything either, because that's just who Ben is and what he does. What else went on? I mean, that was pretty much the episode in a nutshell. And then, of course, the big moment at the end of the episode, in the flash forward, Kate comes home. Oh, that was another problem I have with the episode. Even once they make the agreement and they make the deal and she says 10 years probation, can't leave the state of California, and Kate says, okay, I'll take it. Draw up the paperwork and I'll sign anything. So that's all fine and dandy. However, you can't do that. I mean, you can. But then we see Kate walking out of the building. Yeah, it doesn't work that way. Kate would go back into incarceration. They would draw up the paperwork, prove, go through this, do that, and 2 or 3 days later, they'd bring it to her to sign, and then they'd release her. It doesn't all happen in the blink of an eye. And I realize in TV, you hurry things up sometimes, but the fact that the entire procedure of the judicial system in the episode was terrible, I think that's why it stands out even more. I mean, you can get away with cutting one corner, but breaking everything, it just... absolutely ridiculous. Does not fly at all. Then Kate gets home and she's got her maid because Kate's rich now, because all the Oceanic Six are rich because they got this huge settlement because their plane went crash in the ocean. They show her, they're like, you know, you catch them away from the TV and blah, 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 and everything, and then she goes upstairs, and you see her kid that, you know, she's been talking about, and it's like, you know, and I honest, I can't remember honestly if I had ever speculated that she had Aaron. I think that we had, there was talk of it, that she could have had Aaron as soon as she said she had a kid. Of course, at the same time, we don't know how long this has been going on. But then again, at the same time, to believe that she didn't get incarcerated as soon as she got off the plane, you know, again, there's so many problems with this whole thing. It's hard to speculate anything. But then, you know, we find out definitively now that she has Aaron, and, you know, he's, you know, the more I think about it, he's even older. He's older than one. He's got to be, I mean, he talks pretty clearly. I mean, honestly, he looks like two. And if it took them that long to get Kate's trial, they really problems with the L.A. judicial system. Yeah, it just brings me more questions. I wish Karen was here. Somebody to bounce stuff off of. Hopefully she'll be here soon. Yeah, but anyway, Kate has Karen. Where's Claire? What happened to Claire? Of course, having already seen the show, we know what happened to Claire, but initially it's like, oh my God, where's Claire? So, I think that's it, for me at least, with Eggtown. When Karen gets here, we'll go back, obviously, and touch on it, but gets right now, we'll get right into the Constant. Love the Constant. What is one of my favorite episodes. Very, very well done. Really gives us some answers and rules to how things work. You know, this is an interesting concept of time travel. I've always liked this type of time travel because it's a time travel of the mind, not the body, which I think is pretty neat because it reminds me of Quantum Leap and their version of time travel and their theory of everything. Loved Quantum Leap growing up. It was a great show. Hated the way it ended. Really terrible ending. Very, very similar here with the Constant, with Desmond and his time travel, where his body stays, but his consciousness goes to the past and back to the, you know, back and forth between the past and the future. Sorry. Excuse me. I'm not tired. So anyway, we start the episode. They're in the helicopter. Oh, that's something else that's been going on. Is we'll start there on the beach. They're trying to get a hold of the freighter crew because it's been a day since they left, and it should only take a couple hours to get to the flight or the helicopter to the freighter. And Jack and Juliet want to know what the hell's going on. And Daniel's like, we should tell them. And Charlotte's like, we shouldn't say anything. And she's like, oh, we don't know what's going on because we're right here with you. And Jack's like, you don't seem very concerned, you know. You definitely know something. You might be here with me, but you definitely know something. And So Daniel explains to them that time on the island is not necessarily real time. Time is funny on the island, is basically how he explains it. In the previous episode when the rocket was shot off the freighter and showed up, I think it was like half an hour later on the island, we knew at that time that something was kooky with time on the island, and now we see it again, that they're not on the freighter yet because they left a day before, and they are still not there. So we go to the helicopter, and we see Desmond and Saeed, and Saeed's asking all kinds of annoying questions. And he says, like, you need to write down where you're going. And Frank's like, this is what Daniel told me, so this is what I'm doing. So Saeed knows something screwy is going on. But Saeed is also probably pound for pound overall throughout the series one of the smartest characters on the show, because he asks the pertinent questions. He doesn't always get the answers, but he at least knows to ask the questions. Never shows his whole hand. He's always got something held off in the back. So all of a sudden, Desmond starts freaking out and says, what am I doing here? Who are you guys? What's going on? And then he goes back to a time when he was in the army, and everybody gets pissed, and he's waking up in his rack, and they're called to intention for inspection, and he's slow getting to his post, and he gets reamed out, and, you know, he tells about how he's very sorry he's having a dream that he was on a helicopter, and his CO says, well, at least it was a goddamn military dream. So there was that, at least. And he's very confused. He has no idea what's going on. He's telling his friend how vivid it was, and he's never seen anything like that and everything. And I forget why he wants to call Penny. Decides he's going to call Penny, and he goes to call Penny, and, you know, he flips again. It's off, and, you know, we meet Kimi for the first time, and Kimi's like, what the hell, you know, nobody's on the same page. What the hell are they doing here? And Frank's like, well, you know, I brought them here because Daniel told me to, and this and that and everything. And they're like, what's going on here? This isn't how it's supposed to be. You know right away, you can tell Kimi's not right. I never trusted Kimi. I always sensed there was something wrong with him. So they want to take Desmond to sick bay. And Desmond's like, you know, he's freaking out. He has no idea what's going on. He doesn't know who anybody is. Doesn't know what's going on. He's totally at a loss. They get him down to sick bay. He flips back. He goes to call Penny. Then he drops the quarter. He goes to pick the quarter up. And he flips back. I forget how the flips happen. But anyway, he calls Penny, and Penny is like, why are you calling me? Leave me alone. You're a coward. You left me. Screw you, and hangs up on him. So they get to the freighter, and Frank agrees to let them call Daniel because he knows Daniel can help. So they call, and they talk to Dan. Oh, no, wait. See that back. They get a hold of the freighter. They get a hold of them, and Dan wants to talk to them. So Dan talks to Desmond, and he tells Desmond the next time he goes back, he needs to go to Oxford and find him. So, and he gives him some information to tell the past Daniel so that he believes that he's from the future, sort of, kind of. I know. So he does that, and the next time he goes back, he does that, he goes to Oxford because he's got some time off. So he goes to Oxford, talks to Daniel. Daniel thinks that his colleagues are playing a trick on him. Then he tells him he needs 1.21 gigawatts of electricity. I don't remember the exact number. I didn't write it down. Which you know, obviously 1.21 gigawatts is a joke. That's a bolt of lightning. Back to the Future. Daniel, some numbers, which we have no idea what those numbers mean at the time. And Daniel's still like, whatever. And then he tells me he knows about Eloise. And that's when Daniel's like, oh, crap, because nobody else knows about Eloise. So takes him back to his lab, classroom, whatever you want to call it, and he punches in the 1.21 gigawatts, whatever it is, and the mouse turns purple, and then she's not back yet. And then the rat runs the maze, and Desmond's like, whoop-de-friggin-do, who cares? A rat ran the maze. Why can't I say that? And Daniel explains to him the rat has never run the maze before. He just finished building the maze, the rat knew how to run the maze because it ran it in the future and is now back in the past, so it already knows how to do it. And then Desmond passes out and goes back to the future, and they're talking to Hal. Well, he doesn't explain it yet because Daniel hasn't told him that part yet. Anyway, he's bouncing back and forth. Daniel tells him that he needs a constant, like an anchor, in both timelines so that he doesn't lose his mind and essentially die. Because right now he's in a state of flux, and he can't stay anchored anywhere. So he needs that anchor in both. He needs something that he loves in both timelines. So, of course, Desmond thinks of Penny. So Penny and Saeed, his wife, calling your girlfriend isn't gonna help our situation. And Desmond's like, you don't understand. I have to call her. She is the answer. So Mikowski's like, well, you can't because somebody trashed the radio room. All communications have been destroyed. And that's when our super Saeed says, oh, well, I got some ideas. I can do some things, and I'll figure it out. I'll go there, and I'll fix things. And they're like, well, how are we supposed to get out? And Minkowski says, go through the door, because there's a friend on the boat. Somebody opened the door for them when they were locked in. Who could be the mystery man that unlocked the door? Dun, dun, dun. And, of course, so he goes back, calls Penny. Her number's been changed. And he's like, oh, crap. So he goes and seeks out the one man who hates him more than anybody. Mr. Widmore. Charles Widmore. Who is at an auction for a diary of Captain Hanzo, who captained the Black Rock. Somehow, I still can't figure out how this happened, but somehow they ended up with a logbook of Hanzo's from the Black Rock, which crashed on the island. The only thing I can think of is somehow somebody got off the island with the logbook. Never figure out how that happened. But anyway. So Charles Widmore bids and wins the logbook. Desmond shows up and talks to Widmore and says, I need Penny's number. It's really, really important. So Desmond, Widmore says, I'll give her address. He goes, because tell you, not me. So Desmond goes to see Penny, and she's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, well, I tried to call, but you changed your number. She's like, I moved. And he's like, give me your number now. He goes, I won't bother you for the next 8 years, but in 8 years, I need to call you. It's very important. If you ever loved me, please give me your number. And she's like, you're friggin' nuts. But she finally gives him the number. And she's like, after all that, you're not even going to write it down. And he's like, it won't matter if I write it down or not, because if he goes back to the future, he's obviously not going to have the paper, because he already tried writing something on his hand once, and it was gone in the past, obviously. So he memorizes the number, he wakes up, and he says to Saeed, Saeed's like, without Penny's number, this whole thing is pointless. And then he spits out the number, and Desmond gets Penny, and she tells him, I talked to your friend Charlie, and I knew you were, I've been looking for you for 3 years, and I talked to Charlie, and he told me you were there, and I'm still looking for you, and I'm not on any boat, and yada, 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 yada. And then Desmond's all better. He calls Saeed by name to tell him, I know who you are. because he's all better, because he got his constant, because he found his, the one thing he loves in both timelines. Pretty straightforward episode, but what I like about it is it explains this aspect of time travel. At this point in the show, we don't know there's another aspect of time travel. Desmond is special and unique. He's not like everybody else. Why? Couldn't really say. Is it because of what happened with the failsafe key at the hatch when he blew it up? Has Desmond always been special? Not really sure, but whatever the case is, he has this ability to time travel within himself like that. You know, and obviously with the strangeness of the island and the magnetism and everything, when they got on that, if you want to call it, border of the island space and the earth, rest of the earthly space, there's, you know, weird vibrations and whatnot happening, which screwed with his mojo and sent him fluttering through time. But the fact that having that anchor locks you back in place, it answered some things for us, as far as Desmond at least. And then we have Daniel, who really don't know enough about Daniel at this point. We don't know that Daniel, you know, we see Daniel and Charlotte playing cards, or while he's guessing the cards, and he got 2 out of 3, and she's like, it's progress, and he's like, how's that progress? I mean, you see Daniel in the past, he's brilliant. He has a brilliant mind. Brilliant mind, and he doesn't brilliant on the island. He seems better, but he doesn't seem as brilliant as the man we see at the at Oxford. Sorry, and we see him in the beginning of the season. He's like this drooling mess. that was watching TV. So, we don't have enough information on Daniel to quite understand what's going on with him yet, but we see that he puts in his notebook, he didn't put it in his notebook. He reads in his notebook, if things ever go bad, Desmond Hume will be my constant. Now, the question is, did he write that after Desmond's visit? Had that already happened? Because what happened, but Desmond's also special, so he doesn't apply to the rules, or the rules don't apply to him. So did that already happen? Didn't that already happen? Hard to say. I don't think it was really answered, because, as we'll later learn about Daniel, is his memory is not what it used to be, which could explain why he didn't know all this going into it, because if it has already happened, then the argument is, well, why didn't he remember Desmond? Why didn't he know? And with Daniel's own memory problems, that would explain why he doesn't know about Daniel or about Desmond. So was that already in the book that Hume will be my constant? Did he write it after the fact and it magically showed up in the book, like as if it had always been there because of the way time would change? One can't really say. So that's kind of where that's at. I love it when a show gives you their rules to their stories. You know, gives you the answers to the questions that you have. Small answers, but answers that defined for me what time travel on this show. Wow, that episode really is kind of cut and dry, isn't it? I'm running out of stuff to say. thought Karen would have been here by now. Apologize for that. Going on in the episode. Sorry, I lost my place here. Sorry. Nobody in the chat. Nobody bounced up on me. 42. Oh, not too bad. 42 minutes by myself. I got to pat myself on the back. looks like Karen might not be making it after all. So if she doesn't show up the next 10 minutes, I guess we're going to call that a wrap. Remind everybody, Tuesday night, we will be doing Fandom Access, talking about Warehouse 13, Continuum, Orphan Black is back, so we'll be talking Orphan Black, Revenge, I think Revenge is on this week, whatever else is on, whatever else we can think to talk about. I want to briefly talk about Captain America with Karen, now that we both have that I've seen it, and how it ties in with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Aside from that, everyone come back here next Saturday for our next episode of Lost for Lost. We'll be discussing episodes 6 and 7, which I'm going to look right now to see what the titles are because I can't think. Spare me with me one second. I'm very sorry. I should have had this already pulled up, but I don't always think things through. Episode 6 and 7. We have episode 6 is The Other Woman. And then episode 7 is Ji Yan, which is a really fun episode. Love the way they filmed that episode. The Other Woman's a good episode, interesting episode, we'll say. Guest stars Andrea Roth as Harper Stanhope. Many people might remember Andrea from Rescue Me, where she played, God, I can't think of her character's name. She played Dennis Leary's wife on Rescue Me. So she will be guest starring in that. She guest stars in that episode in The Other Woman. Of course, Ji Yan, which is a great episode. Very, very well done. Kept you guessing right up to the end of the episode what was going on. Really like the way they did it, which is I feel like I'm spoiling if I say too much. And who knows, maybe somebody out there is watching along with us like Roger had been at the beginning of the year. So I won't actually say anything yet as to what I'm talking about. No Karen yet. So, I want to stretch this out and give her a chance for the next 15 minutes, but I am completely running out of things to say. If there's anybody listening to me that would like to call in so that I don't sound so stupid anymore, the number to call in is, I should have said this at the beginning of the episode, 914-338-0314 if you want to call and ask me some questions or just discuss things about laws. Tell me how well I'm doing or terrible I'm doing. Chat room's open if somebody wants to go into the chat room. Talk to me through the chat. I don't know what else to say, how to drag this out any further, I'll be honest with you guys. Let me look at my notes and just think in general. Yeah, I've mentioned all my notes. So that I can't really think of anything. So rather than sit here with dead air and me keep saying I guess we will call it a night. And I know you're carrying 3 more minutes. I'm going to find stuff to talk about. Most of you know we're doing this rewatch of Lost because in September in Hawaii, there is a fan reunion where a bunch of Lost fans are going to come together and relive the magic that was Lost. lots of fun events. There's two tours for those that register with the fan reunion. There's an opening ceremony. There's an auction of lost memorabilia. There's going to be, I don't know the specifics of it, but there's going to be a, there's going to be cast members there. I don't know who they are. I don't want to speculate or anything. All the information you possibly want to know is over at Lost TV, or Lost TV, sorry, Lost2014.com. All the information you need is there. They're actually running a contest right now, a 15-second video clip of what Lost means to you. And I believe the prize is that the winner doesn't have to pay for their registration fee. So, well, that's the great stuff. If you're a fan of Lost and you're planning on going, I know I'll be there. I don't get to do much. My wife and I met because of Lost, so we haven't been on a vacation in a while. So this is doubly nice for us. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good time. It's still no Karen. So with that, my friends, I shall say namaste. Come listen to Fandom Access Tuesday night, where Jamie and Karen will be with me. We discuss our TV shows, and back here next Saturday for more Lost. I just have the episode names, and I totally forgot them. Just totally screwed that up. Episode 6, The Other Woman. Episode 7, Gion. And see what we can do about getting some more guest stars on this show here. We need some more ex-Losties. Maybe we'll get Andrea Gabrielle to come back and talk some more to us. Get some other people, see what I can do. If anybody has any suggestions or you know anybody, please send them our information. Maybe we'll get some people on here and have some more people to talk to. Everybody out there, actually, I have something I want to mention. Vincent Madison, who was a huge part of the Lost Web Maze when this was all first going on. Doug Brown is his real name. He owns a website called GlobeSpotter.com, and he has started up a bit of a game again. Apparently, I'm the only one that got the memo because I was the only one trying to figure things out based on his clues last week. Maybe I'll get him to come on the podcast next week or one of these weeks to talk some Lost with us. Maybe promote his own stuff that he's got going on. He's a brilliant mind. If he had written Lost, I think a lot of things would have been a little bit better. But anyway, with that being said, I'm officially ending the episode now. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, everybody at NDB Media, Roger and the gang, for letting us do this. And as always, you can, if you missed any part of this, you can download the podcast in its entirety. Once I finish this. So I guess that's it. See everybody next week or Tuesday if you come. Namaste and good night.